And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for The Law and You right here on 4CRB. Your opportunity to get free legal advice, as always, from now until 9.30, that's 10.30 Tweed Coast time. All we need you to do is get on the telephone. 55208888 is our number. That's 55208888. Don't forget, if you're south of the Tweed River, you need 07 in front of that number, or you can use our email address, talkback@4crb.com, and we will be able to answer your question next week if you happen to send one in using our email address. Otherwise, the program is all about you and it's about your calls. So please don't hold back. Get on that telephone straight away, 55208888. We often get a number of calls towards the end of the program, which is always a bit of a problem. We'd much rather have the calls in early so that we can deal with them in a timely manner and provide adequate advice, as well as not only helping you but helping others out in our listening audience who may have a similar question but just don't have the opportunity to get to the telephone. An article that I read the other day, which I thought was quite interesting and probably quite relevant to a number of our listeners, was about being cautious of promises that are made by little old men and little old ladies. And the headline really caught me. And basically what it was all about was situations which can occur over a period of time, sometimes between neighbours, other times between between someone who is a friend of an older person, and they start helping them out. And slowly but surely the amount of help required gets greater and greater, and then the person concerned makes a promise to them that they'll leave a part of their estate to them, or they're going to give them their home when they pass away because of all the assistance they've given. And quite often this is not a relative. And so as the obligation grows stronger, obviously a lot of people just provide that assistance because they want to be helpful. But when it does really become quite consuming in the life of the person who's providing the services, the promise of receiving something in recognition of what they've been doing can be relevant, because it may mean that the person providing those services and assistance alters their lifestyle so that they can provide it. And all too often we see that these promises simply don't materialise in the will of the person who's made the promise, or alternatively, there's a challenge to what the person may decide they're going to give. So the secret with these things is that although it's a difficult subject to raise with the person you're providing services for, there are ways that you can raise it and say, well, look, maybe we should record something in writing in relation to what I'm doing so that everyone has a clear understanding of what's going on. But enough of that. We've got our first caller online. As we say, a very good morning to Lynn. G'day, Lynn. How are you today? Lynn, are you there? Lynn, are you there?
Yes, John.
Yes, hi, Lynn. How are you today?
Very well, and yourself?
Very well indeed. How can I help you today?
I was wondering whether there's anything that you can put in place to prevent your estranged children being involved with your affairs or healthcare or demise, as I would suspect if you're a single person, they're your immediate next of kin by law.
Right, okay. So the obvious thing to do in that situation, Lynn, would be to put in place an enduring power of attorney in favour of the person or persons that you would like to assist with that particular situation, and also put in place an advance health directive, which specifically sets out who will make decisions for you in relation to your end-of-life decisions or treatment decisions, that sort of thing. And it's probably possible to either put in the Advanced Health Directive or probably more properly have a separate document which says that I specifically record that I do not wish these persons to have any part in any of these decisions, so that there's a very clear record for the world to see that when these people come perhaps rushing back when you're getting close to the end of your life and they think, oh, well, it's time to get back in touch because we might be able to get part of the inheritance, then you've got a very clear record of who you want to be making those decisions for you. And then with your will, of course, if these are children who are estranged, that doesn't take them outside the class of persons who might be able to make a claim on your estate. And so in those circumstances, it's extremely important to look at all the things that you might be able to do in terms of your will to minimise the likelihood of them being able to make a claim on your estate. And then secondly, putting in place a statutory declaration which sets out in considerable detail the reasons why you're not making any provision for them in your will. So that document will then, in the unlikely event that they do challenge your will, that document will be able to be produced to the court as evidence of what you were thinking at the time you made your will and why you don't believe that these people are worthy of receiving part of your estate. So it shows to the court that you've given due consideration to their position, namely that they may be children, but you've said, notwithstanding the fact that these are my children, for these reasons I don't believe that I have any duty or obligation to make any provision for them.
That's wonderful, because I've done all that. So I'm on the
ball. You're certainly on the right track. And I mean, Lynn, at the end of the day, though, please be aware that no one can provide you with a guarantee that your children will not challenge your will or that your children will not try and interfere in relation to health decisions, etc. But by doing what you've done, you're certainly putting in place everything that you could reasonably do to prevent that from happening.
Wonderful. Thanks, John. Have a great day.
Yes, and you have a lovely day too, Lynn. The time on 4CRB is just marching along. It's just past 13 minutes past 9. That's past 10 on the Tweed. The Law and You is the program. Our phone number, 5520888. That's 5520888. Presently, we don't have any callers online. So if you have a question or a query, give us a call right now, 5520888, and we'll be able to answer your query for you. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Did you hear about Jane?
No.
She just moved home care providers.
Really? Why?
Well, home care assistants have no out-of-pocket expense and they're government accredited.
Sounds like a smart move.
And she gets to choose her own caregiver with no lock-in contract or exit fee, no out-of-pocket expense, plus 24-hour care support.
Wow. More for less, hey? How can I contact them?
Our sponsor, Home Care Assistance Gold Coast, Tweed and Northern New South Wales, are the home care partner you can trust. Call 07-5528-1643.
And this is The Law and You on 4CRB. Our telephone number, 5520888. That's 5520888. Very quiet morning this morning. Presently, no calls online. So if you have a question or a query, give us a call and you'll get straight through. Now, before Lynn came online, I was talking about the need to beware of promises that are made to you in exchange for an offer to care for a person. And this equally applies if you're a person who is being assisted by someone and you have an intention of making some provision for them in recognition of the service they're providing. It is extremely important that both parties get legal advice in relation to this. And as I said earlier, I know it's something that might be seen to be a little unsavoury, that you don't like people to think that you're being mercenary in just wanting to know that what you've been told by your friend or neighbour will in fact occur. But it certainly is going to save a world of heartache later down the track. It also will save a huge dilemma for the executors of the will, as well as avoiding, importantly, a massive amount of legal costs. So just a bit of advice there to get legal advice and to make sure documentation, appropriate documentation is put in place. But enough of that. We've got Barry online. Good morning, Barry. How are you today?
Is that John, is it?
It is indeed. Barry, how can I help you today?
Great, mate. Just a question. Sure. I have a boat for sale, and a broker had the boat. He had a customer on the boat, and they had an inspection, and the customer withdrew, and the broker then, I didn't pull it off the broker pulled it down himself. Now, what I'm concerned about is left me to sell the boat. Now, if someone comes back and then he comes and says, I introduced those people to the boat, where do I stand? Because there's about a $3,000 commission on selling the boat.
Right, okay. So, well, what I would be suggesting you do is get in touch with the broker and tell him that you want a list of all of the people who... just the names, don't ask for phone numbers or anything, but a list of all the people that he's recorded as inspecting the boat, so that there can be no argument about anyone who comes along later. Or the alternative is for you to say to him, look, you know, given that you've said you're not interested, I want you to sign a release to say that if someone who inspected the boat while you had it comes along at a later stage, you agree that you won't make any claim for commission.
So what if he says, no, I won't do that?
He won't do either of those things. Then you could put a condition in the contract selling the boat that the buyer acknowledges that they were not introduced to the boat by ABC Yacht Brokers and agree that they will indemnify you if that representation turns out to be incorrect.
Yes, okay. Well, that's basically just the question, because there was only one person that actually, there was about three people looked at the boat and went away to look at something else, and then one person actually put a deposit on the boat and they had their inspection, et cetera, et cetera, and they withdrew because they weren't happy with the inspection, and he withdrew because he wasn't happy with the inspection. He wasn't, so whatever, but I didn't withdraw it, so I'm glad in a way, because, you know, I have no control when they're doing it. I'll just advertise it myself.
Yep. All right. Well, as long as you protect yourself that way, Barry, you should be right.
Okay. Thank you, John. Thank you very
then.
Much.
All the very best. Time on 4CRB just rolls along. It's just past 18 minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. As we say, a very good morning to Steve. G'day, Steve. How are you today?
I'm excellent. That's John, is it?
It is indeed. How can I help?
Oh, John, well, retainer wall issues.
Oh, dear, right.
I suppose you would love. Yeah. John, look, I am on the lower side, and my understanding that the side that is the lower would have to pay for the full cost of the retainer wall. But my issue is that my neighbour has a concrete footpath which is butted up to the retainer wall, and it's directed toward the rain runs my way. So I get all of his rainwater, which runs down the small gap between the retainer wall and the concrete, which I consider has partly rotted the retainer wall, and I've partly held him responsible. How would I go about this?
Well, what I would suggest you do is approach the neighbour and tell the neighbour that you believe that the camber of the... What's the natural slope of the land from up above? Is his block essentially flat?
Yes, flat, yeah.
Okay,
but
so...
the concrete is directed towards...
Yeah, right. Yeah. So what I would be suggesting is I would be saying to him, look, you know, I believe that your concrete path... because of the camber of the path, which directs water in the event of rain onto the wooden retaining wall, has caused it to fail prematurely. If you could get a report from someone, if you, for example, get someone in to give you a quote to replace the retaining wall, and they are prepared to give a statement saying that, in their opinion, the excessive amount of water that's directed to it from this path has led to the premature failure of the wall, you could then approach your neighbour and say, well, look, you know, I think that your concrete path has led to the premature failure of the retaining wall, and therefore I want you to contribute to the replacement of it. And you could possibly say to the neighbour, you know, that you might, you know, you might agree that you're going to do that on a 50-50 basis. If the neighbour refuses, what you can then do give him a notice to fence under the Dividing Fences Act. Retaining walls normally do not come within the Dividing Fences legislation, but where there is a dividing fence that stands on top of the retaining wall, sometimes they are dealt with. So you could possibly do that and bring an application before the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal for an order as to how the two of you should contribute to the repair, including the retaining wall.
Well, thanks for that. Hmm. Thanks for the information.
What part of the Gold Coast do you live, Steve?
I'm in Parkwood.
Parkwood. The other thing I could suggest you do would be to, if you want to go into it in a bit more detail, because obviously in this program we don't have a lot of time to do it, but if you want to go into chapter and verse, you could get in touch with the Gold Coast Community Legal Centre and Advice Bureau in Southport. In 34 Railway Street in Southport. Have you got a pen handy? I can give you the number.
I know where they are, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, if you know where they are, you can look them up online or in the phone book. Give them a call, and you might actually make an appointment and go in there and see them, and they would be able to go through the relevant legislation with you and give you a bit more advice about how you could prepare for what's required.
Yeah, well, thanks for that information.
Okay, Steve.
Pursue it.
All the very best. And the time just keeps rolling along, and it's just past 22 minutes past 9. That's past 10 on the Tweed. As we say, a very good morning to Peter. G'day, Peter. How are you today?
Oh, good morning, John. Just a question for you regarding challenging a will.
Sure.
If somebody does challenge a will, what supportive evidence do they need to support their claim?
Well, it depends on the basis on which the will is challenged. So, you know, there are a number of grounds under which a will can be challenged. It can be challenged on the grounds of undue influence, so that someone was forced into making a will which doesn't really reflect their wishes, in which case it may be that if you were successful in that challenge, in that claim, that any prior will made would stand. So commonly a challenge on undue influence would be made by someone who was a beneficiary under a previous will, but has either been left a smaller amount under the new will or has been left out entirely. The other one might be lack of capacity. So if a person can be shown to not have testamentary capacity at the time they made the will, again, it may be that that will is found to be invalid because the person indeed did not have capacity. And as a result, a prior will would stand. And again, that challenge would more than likely be made by someone who was a beneficiary under the earlier will but has received a reduced or no amount under the new will. The other sorts of challenges are family provision claims, which are made by people who come within the class of persons who can make a claim, and primarily that's the spouse of a person. It is a child of that person, or it is someone who was financially dependent on that person at the time that they passed away, and it's usually a person who was a minor who was dependent on the person at the time they passed away. Now, the circumstances that the court will look at in those situations are, firstly, the relationship of the claimant to the testator. They will look at the value of the estate. They will look at the financial circumstances of the claimant. They will look at whether they think adequate provision has been made for the particular claimant and all the circumstances. And they will also look at disentitling conduct. So if the claimant, for example, is a child who cut themselves off from the testator and has had absolutely no contact with them for years, despite the fact that the parent has tried to get in contact or maintain contact, and they've just completely rebuffed all contact, but then at the 11th hour they come out of the woodwork because their parent has passed away and try and make a claim on the estate, then that may be regarded as disentitling conduct, which could see the beneficiary unsuccessful, the claimant unsuccessful in their claim. And the thing that people have to be really careful about these days is the courts are becoming increasingly concerned with claims and the cost to the estate in legal fees of these claims. And so particularly where there are small estates, if the court finds a litigant has no claim, they could very well be on the wrong end of an order for costs to pay the costs of the estate. And, of course, on top of that, they'd have to pay their own legal costs as well. So there is certainly no guarantee these days that a claimant will get their costs paid. Normally, if they are successful and they get a claim, they have provision made for them out of the estate, then they will get an order for costs, unless unless the estate, the executors of the estate, have made an offer of settlement, which the claimant has refused. And then when they go on and they finally, their claim is settled, if they receive no more than the amount that was originally offered, then they will not get their legal costs paid from the point of the offer onwards.
Understood. Mm. So would I be right in saying that challenging a will is a complicated and expensive exercise for anyone?
Potentially, yes. It can be. I mean, some cases, Peter, are just a lay-down misere that, that the person's entitled. For example, if a parent said to their daughter, you are not to marry John Smith under any circumstances, and if you do, I'll cut you out of the will, and nonetheless the child goes ahead and marries John Smith, who's just a reasonable sort of a guy, but they didn't like him because he was, they didn't consider he was good enough for their daughter, or he had the wrong religion or whatever. And the child has endeavoured to maintain contact with the parents, but they've just completely cut them off. Well, that's a situation where a court would, in all probability, make an order in favour of the claimant because the parents' actions have been clearly unreasonable in endeavouring to dictate who their child will marry and then cutting them out of their will for no other reason than the fact that they married the person they were in love with.
Understood. Mm. So these people who come out of the woodwork when a will is executed, they need solid ground to make a claim. They simply can't say that 10 years ago Uncle Jim or Uncle Bob promised me this and he promised me that.
Well, certainly a nephew or a niece, a grandchild, unless they were supported by the deceased at the time of death, are not claimants who can bring a claim. If it's a situation where they say Uncle Bill or Uncle Bob promised me this, probably ties into what I was saying earlier, where, for example, if the nephew or the niece has cared for Uncle Bill or Uncle Bob for many, many years and done all sorts of things for them on the promise that, Uncle Bob was going to leave them their house, then it may be that they've got a claim for a constructive trust, that, they provided all this service to Uncle Bill or Uncle Bob because of the promises he made, and as a result of that, it's disadvantaged them in life because they couldn't go and do other things that they wanted to do. But that's a really tricky claim to bring and undoubtedly an expensive claim to pursue.
Understood. So the old saying rings true, where there's a will, there's a family.
I used to say where there's a will, there's a lawsuit. Either where there's a will, there's a lawsuit, or where there's a will, there's potentially a greedy relative.
Yes.
All right, then.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Peter, all the very best. Well, that just about brings us to the end of our program for today, and in fact, it does in precisely 15 seconds or 20 seconds. We'll be at the end of the show. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, it's been great to be with you this morning for The Law and You. I look forward to being back with you again next Tuesday morning for another program. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.